Okay, so we're getting close to the end. Is everybody ready? Do we get one? We got only one last. Oh no. Well, good thing is that this final speaker is really going to do it for us. He epitomizes the kind of qualities we enjoy in our dinner guests here at Truth Be Told. Exciting, caring, entertaining, and smooth. Please welcome legendary local healer, David Breitbach.
Well, he told me that I could tell him what to say. And he said, if you don't tell me what to say, I'm just going to call you a legendary local healer. How could I top that? So for me, the theme of this night, the guest who's coming to dinner, it's made me really realize I'm glad that worms aren't coming to the dinner. I'm glad that I'm not roasting a sheep out in the woods right now. But that those movies, the guest who's coming to dinner, Sir with Love, the Sidney Poitier movies when I was young, 12, watching Saturday afternoon movies, they changed my life. Like Maya's talk, they helped you understand there's substance to life. There's hope. There's depth. And that wasn't what I was getting growing up in Iowa, growing up in a small town. But from that, I saw there was something more to life. And for me, that became my direction. How do I create aliveness? How do I help people wake up and be here on this moment? And I found often that happens at dinner. I think the first really memorable dinner, because when I was a kid, dinner was about laughing. It was about, we'd laugh so hard that chocolate milk would come out of our nose and then we'd laugh more, you know? And then so for me, it's like, you know, early on, it was about humor, laughter, about coming into feeling alive. And so I remember one dinner, you know, being out at the restaurant, and I really loved my ketchup. And I had that ketchup bottle in my hands. I was 7 years old, and it was one of those red, squeezable ones, you know, with a big pointy top. And it was really full. I mean, they must have just filled it. It was heavy. And, you know, I didn't mean to, but I was like, you know, we were laughing about something, and I must have squeezed. And that ketchup arced 12 feet across two booths and hit our waitress right square and a big red check mark up to her face. So, I mean, that was funny. I thought it was funny, but I don't know. I mean, it was interesting, wasn't it? But as you get older, I found that, you know, that dinner, yeah, it brings aliveness. Like the dinner where, you know, my daughter, Genevieve, my oldest daughter, those who knew her, she's into horses, right? She was little, even she and Gracie would gallop imaginary horses all around the Pleasant Ridge playground up to like sixth or seventh grade. I mean, they're starting to make fun of her, but she was really good at real horses too. So one day at eight, she came into dinner at age eight, and she goes, "Who do we know that has television? You know, good Walter family would know. We have." She's like, "Well, you know." So we're trying to think, and she says, "Well, you know, Funny Side could win the Triple Crown. He'd be the first horse to win the Triple Crown in 25 years. Who do we know that we could watch the race?" I mean, she'd never seen a horse race. I mean, she's reading things, you know. So she's so excited, and so we're thinking, do the Banners? Maybe the Banners have, you know, maybe they have it, or the, no, no, so we're thinking of, we couldn't think of anybody who would have the type of TV to watch it live. So she is so disappointed, her little face. And so I said, "Let's just go. Let's just go. Let's go watch it ourselves." And she's like, "What?" So we got on a plane, you know, that next week, flew out to New York, front row seats to watch Funny Side try to win the Triple Crown. And, well, he didn't win, but we did. Because that began our adventures. And that was something that we still love to have. We just look for our adventures, and that's part of life. You know, fast forward 8 or 9 years, and we're in England, Genevieve and I, and we're driving to Glastonbury, you know, like a good Waldorf family. We're going to go to Glastonbury and see the druids and things like that. So, but it's raining, and I'm driving on the left side of the road. That's crazy. And it's dark, and the roads are windy, and it's flooding. And we got a couple hours yet. So we stop in a little village called Castle Coombe. It already sounds like a Scooby-Doo thing, doesn't it? Anyway, so we stop in Scooby-Doo land in Castle Coombe and go into the bar, into the pub for some tea. So to ask the barman, because I decided at that point I don't want to go any further. So do you have a room? Is there a room in town? No, there's no rooms in town. There might be some at the manor. And the way he said it, I was like, Then the pub phone didn't work. Cell phones didn't work. Phone booth, no phone in it. Starting to get a little shaggy Scooby-Doo thing going on in my head. But I was determined, so we drive down. He said, it's at the end of the street there, you know, down that long driveway, you know, end of the road. And it wasn't just a long driveway. It was miles through forest with rain and thunderstorms and blackness. And then as we come around the corner and here looms out of the darkness, the manor house, gargoyles and ivy-covered walls and lantern lit, and Genevieve's face was like, "No, we can't go in there. We can't go in there." It's like, and so we're like, kind of that shaky thing, you know. But I was determined, and so we get out of the car, going through the rain up to the big, huge door with the big knockers, you know, and knock. I'm like, what do you do? You know, so we knock, and the door creaks open. And I swear, this butler peeks out with a big, bulging eye, and he goes, "Welcome to the manor." You know, and we're like, you know, "Do you have a room?" And he comes in, and we, you know, he says, "Yes, we have a room." You know, he's kind of shaking, and he's taking us along. And there's no one else in there, right? This huge mansion place, and it was like creepy and spooky, like Halloween spooky. And so I asked him, "Where are all the people?" "At dinner, sir," with his eye. And so we just need to have a place. So he takes us with one of these candle-like things, you know. We're walking through the passages, up the little steps and down the steps, more passages, and then opens our door, which leads to more steps. And then we're in this 700-year-old room. I mean, it's just crazy and cool. It's really cool, actually. And he shuts the door. And, oh my God, more shaggy. Oh, I'm famished. I'm so hungry, you know. And and Scooby, well, Genevieve says, "Yeah, I'm hungry too." And so we creep out the door, creep back down all the stairs to find where the dinner, you know, people are at dinner. There must be a dinner hall. And there's the butler again with big eye. "Do you want dinner, sir?" And we're like, "Yeah, yeah." So he opens the door to a palace ballroom with lords and ladies sitting in these chairs and, you know, the tables all over with paintings on the ceilings and gilded around. Oh my God, it was we had a 7-course dinner. We each had our own waiter. It turned out to be one of the greatest restaurants in all of Great Britain. And the place we're staying in was some historical mansion thing. And it was like, oh my God. So we ended up having one of the greatest meals one could ever imagine, just because we allowed to have some aliveness, some courage. And so through that, we continue. And then with my youngest daughter, Kessie, when sometimes dinners are about creativity, life's about creativity. And so I had created this game for adults, you know, to help them learn how to relate, and it's kind of sensual and fun. And so she had watched me create this over the years, and all the boxes arrived from China, right? And there's 500 games, and we're taking them out of cartons and putting them in delivery things to send to other people. And so we're sitting at dinner, and it's surrounded by boxes. And her, I could see she was six. And her brain was working about something, I don't know. But so after dinner, she says, well, Daddy, kids need to learn to relate too. So we're going to make a game called Dragon Wings, and kids are going to get their wings and learn how to fly. Whoa. Brilliance from child's minds. So we now, the next year or two, would be more creativity. Every dinner, we talked about the game. Every dinner, we created, what could we put in the game to make it alive and help people relate? And so after a year, we tested out, some of the people here tested it out, and now you can find it on Amazon. So it'd be creativity. But all dinners aren't always happy meals, you know? And so I remember at 14, going home after basketball practice, you know, having dinner with the family, and they're all kind of subdued, and you know, I don't know why, I'm just hungry. And so at the end of the meal, what they tell me, our dog died today. You know, it's been a dog my whole life. I had never been around anything that had died. And the grief and the sadness and the nausea from having eaten before they told me was so intense and so alive. You know, I've realized since that's one thing maybe missing from life is death. And it's something to embrace and experience and to feel. In fact, I recently just flew over to Spain for a seminar, but somehow something said, it was going through Lisbon, and something said, I want that extra day in Lisbon because I want to have a good dinner in Lisbon. That was just I want a good dinner in Lisbon. I kept hearing that in my head. And so I get to Lisbon, and I find a place. They have a 9 o'clock reservation for me, and I went, and there's just this bustling, beautiful, exciting little restaurant. And they put me at my table, and some American tourists at the next table. And I was going, oh, yeah. I wanted to know more local flavor. But as soon as I sat down, they started joking with me. And, you know, and I had an opportunity then either just to shut them out and just be at my little dinner, that I was damn well going to have a good dinner here, or I could interact with them, have aliveness. So they were asking me, what are you about? And I told them about helping people become alive and helping people recover from stresses, from post-traumatic difficulties, and telling how that's my job, that's what I do. And I could see one of the men starting to have a little tear coming out of his eye. And so I asked him what he was about. And he and his wife had lost their 18-year-old daughter, had been shot at the Virginia Tech shootings and killed. So it was like, whoa, the empathy. I already get myself crying right now just feeling with them that pain, that difficulty, and he'd then dedicated his life to helping people. How do you help people who've been through that have survived it? And after he had tried for years to try to get laws changed about guns, but that's another story. But he helped get some laws passed in Virginia that set aside money that would help those who needed treatment get treatment from post-traumatic. So, you know, by allowing myself out there to actually relate, I had a deep human experience. I've gained a friend who wants me to collaborate with him and some professors and how to help improve treatment for post-traumatic. And it was the depth. And somehow I just know, again, you're led to those things. You listen. And so dinners can bring that aliveness to you, whether it's humor or it's creativity or adventure. And sometimes it brings, you know, I guess sometimes it's the dinners we don't even have that can be most memorable. So here I was, Iowa State graduate, or a sophomore, 20 years old, in biochemistry lab. And there's this really pretty redhead girl who was very smart, I could tell, and seemed very nice. And when I caught her eye, she seemed to be, you know, smiling back. And so I was a little shy at the time, so it took me a couple weeks, but I finally plucked up the courage and asked her to dinner. And she was so excited. She said, yeah, well, I'd love to. That sounds amazing. And so I was thinking here, it's like, yeah, My brain was starting to turn off because I was standing next to a pretty girl. And so we're kind of just chatting. And then she asked me, are you from Japan? No. China? No. Korea then? No. Well, which Oriental country are you from? And I'm going, yeah. And at that point, you know, my male brain had turned off. And so I told her the truth, which was, I'm from Iowa. I my answers are German, you know. But then the brain started waking up a little and saying, well, I do have one French ancestor and one from Scotland. Thinking hopefully that would help, you know. And she just got a sour face and, you know, actually I have something that night. I really can't go out to dinner. And she never looked at me or talked to me again. Life is a mystery. It's like, I never thought of myself with an Oriental look. But I guess who she thought was coming to dinner wasn't me. So anyway, take stock, you know, and I just suggest bring aliveness. Who are you bringing to dinner? Which version of you do you bring to dinner? Do you bring the alive, connecting person, or someone who's half dead? Most people out there aren't fully living as they're living. So I just put out to you, live alive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Thank you for being part of the team that is reminding us how to fly, reminding us about life's mystery. And I feel really excited what you're saying there about half dead and alive. So I know everybody came here for an experience. So I just want to, everybody, we're going to just take one last chance to feel alive. Thanks to David there. So you can feel it in your body. You can feel it in your you can vocalize it. You can just sit and feel it. But we're just going to take about a couple seconds to feel alive. Oh, yeah! Let's give a big hand for our wonderful speakers tonight. And thank you. That concludes our show.